I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
How we doing, everyone? I apologize that we are late. It is 100% my fault. But then again, you're going to see me wince in pain through this podcast because I'm getting some sort of gain type feedback through this headset. I haven't gotten bought any new equipment yet. I'm using old stuff, and I don't know how I'm getting some sort of feedback through here, but it nearly blew my head clean off a moment ago when I was talking to Paddy. So that's why we were late. I was trying to fix it. So if you do see me wince in pain, it's not due to any of Paddy's brilliant takes. It's probably just because I get this big screeching noise through my headset. But anyway, less of that. I'm going to be supping on hot whiskeys while Paddy does his review today. I've came prepared. I have my... Oh, Jesus, nearly spilled it all over everything. I've got my flask. I've got my Jameson. And I have my sugar. And I have my lemon with cloves pre-prepared also. So I'm going to sit back just like you lads. And I'm going to enjoy this. Because today we're doing a Paddy's half year, our half year review, which I'm actually really looking forward to. Anyway, Paddy, I feel like I haven't spoken to you in ages. How are you doing?
I'm good. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Getting there.
Getting there is right.
We've a quiet week since we were playing so early on Friday evening. So that's why it feels so long since we've been doing... doing a podcast, but yeah, we've had a bit of news. You did two podcasts about player, I think, did you?
Yeah, about John Duran, exactly. Yeah. Someone, and he seems he's flying, or he flew to Birmingham, or he's on his way to Birmingham today to do medicals and sign contracts and whatever else, make sure that he gets his visa waivers or whatever they are, all sorted out here, and then he's hightailing it back to the under-20s for Colombia, where they've got an absolutely ridiculous schedule, Paddy. Paddy, did you see the schedule? Now, my timekeeping isn't the best, as you've seen today, but they play two games in less than 48 hours.
Yeah. But they're only young lads. It's under 19s.
I know, Paddy.
I remember going to tournaments at under 19 level and playing five games in a week and not knocking a store out of you. Like, so they're fine. Don't worry about that. I know they're a bit less now than what they were back in them days, but even at that, two games of 48 hours is tough going, considering it's international. It's Copa America, isn't it? It's under 19 Copa America.
Under 20s. Right? Yeah, under 20s, yeah. South American Championships. And it's, so essentially, yeah, so like there's four games in 8 days. Like it's a bit like Villa after forking out 18 million for a player, and he's got four games in 8 days before he ever throws on the Villa shirt. Like, wouldn't it? No, I'm not even going to say I'm not even going to say it.
The most important thing he can do now is go and light up that championship and come back to us full of beans.
And I hope so too.
Just like Emi Martinez, go and win the bloody thing. That's what he should do now.
Absolutely. And, absolutely.
He'll have everybody else jealous that they didn't get their hands on him before we did. But yeah, it looks like a decent signing. We obviously don't know what the feeling is with the management team. Is he being bought for the future? Is he being bought for the now? I seem to think he'll be bought for the now and they'll give him a try. The guy, he's a young man, but an absolute beast of a young man. Lovely first touch, can score a goal, can hold the ball up. Very skillful. Reminds me of a young Christian Benteke, as I've said to you before.
Yes, I agree with you, but you're just after saying something that's after make me think of something that somebody DM'd me today, and I went back and I watched some of his stuff on Y Scout, and they made the comparison of Nicholas Anelka, and I initially didn't get it, and maybe it was only because it was planted in my mind today. But when I went back and I looked at him, I went, there was a couple of finishes where he just opened his body and I went, oh, Benteke never did that. Benteke never opened his body like that, you know. And yeah, it's
difficult to tell whether he's as quick as Anelka, but definitely the skill is there and the finishing is there. So yeah, it's all bright. It's all good news. And hopefully we'll see more good news towards the end of the week. It looks like we're big in the runner for Guendouzi. So we'll have to wait and see how that.
Yeah,
it's true over the next few days.
Yeah, that was something. That was actually something that just came out there. There was a French show, a young Cass Green. I'm seeing young Cass Green or young Henry vibes. Oh, I'm going to need more hot whiskey, Paddy. I think I'm going to have a couple of cold ones on top of the hot ones, I think, to get over those two thoughts. Although, yeah, there used to be a running joke in Ireland that Cass Green had to take his teeth out before he could head the ball. And you knew he scored, that his celebration was that he was going to have to put his teeth back in.
Neil, I think we've put people out of kilter here. They're all talking about your chair and my chair. You're up higher.
I'm up higher. Yeah, I'm up higher because I'm using the webcam on a laptop at the moment, which is at a different height. Usually my webcam is over here, and that's why normally when you see the podcast, I'm kind of like this when I'm talking to you. But I'm getting a face on here now.
I vacated this room for a couple of days, and my young lad is doing exams, and there's just stuff everywhere, so I've had to tilt my camera up. So that's why you can see my ceiling.
It's not what we'll do, Paddy.
It was either that or clean up, and I hadn't got the energy.
I'll come back here, will I? And I'll broadcast from back here, so I have a bit more headspace. I can't. My arms aren't long enough. Yeah. Jamie Waters says, heard Duran will have problems with work permit, need 15, he has 10 in the under-20 tournament. Columbia will give him another 3, still too short. I don't think so, because of Columbia are like 17th in the world. And I think I read somewhere that by the coefficient and by actually the new Brexit laws about work permits for Brexit, that he'll actually make it based on Colombia being in the last World Cup, even though he didn't play for Colombia in the last World Cup. I think there's something there. It's a bit weird at the moment with regards to it, and it's a kind of a bit of, from what I could tell anyway, that the club could make an impassioned plea, and it's likely to be accepted.
To be given. So yeah. It's actually a lot more difficult to get a work permit from the EU now than it is from South America. What are you doing?
I'm trying to figure out, because I'm thinking that it's because I've got two pop filters on my mic that I'm getting feedback on my monitor. Maybe that's the case.
Worth a try anyway. Yeah, but apparently it's easier to get a work permit from further afield than it is from the EU at the moment, which is why in Ireland we're seeing a lot of our young kids going to the continent as opposed to the old days when everybody went to the UK.
Yeah.
So that all of those things need to be ironed out so people can start moving freely again. And that might take a bit of time. Who knows? We might have a rerun of Brexit before that happens again.
Oh, Jesus, Paddy. No, there's the royal family the last time, and Brexit this time. We're definitely going to be cancelled. You know, you do know that 66% of our listenership comes from the UK, Paddy. I forgot to tell you that, did I?
66%.
And they're a good sort. They're a good sort over there.
I was just guessing something. I wasn't peddling or anything.
Well, we haven't even gotten into our review of the year yet, and I'm already tipping into my second one. But this is to try and kill this cold. Guys, I'm telling you, I've never had a cold for as long. We're in the 17th of January, and it was the 26th of November. And the reason I know the exact date that I came down with this cold was because it was the night that we were starting doing that play I was acting in, that acting gig that I was doing. And the night that we were starting, I went, lads, I feel like a train is after hitting me from behind. And things haven't changed much since. So I do apologize if my voice is a couple of octaves lower. But we've got a couple of questions there. Do you know what? We hit a couple of questions that are in there. Because there's a couple of good questions there. And we can, yeah, there's some games we're not, I can't imagine you're going to spend too long on the Bournemouth game to start the season, Paddy, anyway. So I think PTSD might kick in at that stage, you know. But there are a couple of questions there. There was one question I don't know a whole pile about it. Okay, but I'm going to bring up the question here and we'll talk about it. Where's Kevin Walsh? Kevin Walsh asks about the BK8 sponsorship deal. The Supporters Trust released a very strong statement in opposition to it, and rightly so. Sours the good feeling growing around the club. Paddy, I'm going to let you take this one first because, I I'm very unknowledgeable about this whole sponsorship deal.
Well, we're all very unknowledgeable about it because it's only rumoured. And in fairness to all of the supporters groups, I absolutely agree with them that this is not a line we should be going down in the future. On the other hand, we need money. So where does that come from? For a lot of clubs, it's through advertising of gambling companies. I think nearly everybody either has it on their sleeve or on their jersey. Obviously, I'd rather not. I'd rather see us with a lovely kazoo or whoever, Amita Copiers, or, you know, one of those traditional sponsors, let's call them, then to have to be talking about this. But we don't know how true it is, but it was right of the, if people felt strongly about it, I agree with them that they should speak up and say so. I do have my feelings on it too. I'd rather not have that sponsorship of, or rather not have a gambling company sponsoring us. And that's about all I have to say about it, to be honest. And, you know, fair play to the guys for releasing that statement, and hopefully the club will take notice of it.
I think my limited knowledge of this is it seems to be less the gambling element, albeit that there is a push to from the supporters club, and I'm going to be honest, I'm going to pin my colours to the mast. I think there can be ethical ethical gambling and stuff like that. Obviously, sir, it is a horrible habit when people pick it up, and it is an addiction, and it does ruin families and stuff like that. And I want to be completely conscious of that. But I think it's less the gambling aspect and more the pornographic side of it. If I'm not mistaken, and somebody put me up on this, as I say, because I've kind of shut it out because I don't know a whole pile about it, and it's not that I haven't gone to look about it. I just haven't had time. But I think it's fair for everybody to. I think it's fair for everybody to almost be at the stage now whereby when the trust have put out a statement that the club probably should have mentioned something by now, even if to say that we haven't concluded negotiations or X, Y, and Z, because the worst thing that can happen now is that this kind of leaves the news cycle over 2 or 3 weeks and then just gets announced. That'll sour things for quite a lot of people, I think. So
it could do. And I just want to bring up this comment from Michael Huggins. It says, I think the directive on gambling sponsorship needs to come from the Premier League. And
I agree.
To be honest with you, Michael, the reason why this hasn't really resonated with me over the last few days is that I was under the opinion that this was going to come for next season, that we wouldn't have gambling sponsorships on the shorts.
So was I.
Now, how that, when you've got Sky Sports, who basically run football and live football in
Sky Bet,
they have Sky Bet. So, you know, there's a lot of sponsorship gone in there. All the leagues below are the Sky Bet Championship, the Sky Bet League One, aren't they?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on that will need to be sorted out. So, you know, I think we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But we know that statement has come out. We know there's people who aren't fussed either way and are just happy that we're getting sponsorship in. And we know that people that think very strongly about it. I would be on the ladder. I would prefer if we didn't have any gambling sponsorship at all, but that's just my opinion. A lot of people wouldn't agree with that, But I've seen gambling destroy lives, destroy families, people lose their houses. There's a whole lot that can go wrong when people don't gamble responsibly. So if you can keep that out of the mainstream, I think it's even better.
I'm of the opinion that I wouldn't like to see it. Look, it wouldn't be my first opinion to have it on the front of the shirt. But I also think that if other clubs are going to be raking in 3-4 million for a sleeve sponsorship, and that's a overinflated. Yeah. I know that's overinflated when I said 3 or 4 million. If other clubs are going to be getting like even 2-3 million or something like that a year for having it in the site, sometimes you got to play the game. Now, it doesn't have to be the prominent one across the shirt. Like, I'm not expecting us to have 3-6, bet 365 or to go back to 32 red or Genting or any of those across the front of the jersey. And I don't think it should be there because, as I say, there's plenty of other sponsorship opportunities out there that will sponsor you. But once again, when we're kind of waiting in the mid-table of the Premier League where we are, we can get what we can get and we can call a price, but we can't throw all the babies out with all the bat water, if that makes sense, you know. And that's why you can kind of look at the likes of maybe at Chelsea, for want of a better word, Yokohama across the front of the jersey, Samsung across the front of their jersey and things like that. Like, mm-hmm. Sometimes I'd love for Cadbury's. If Cadbury's had the money to throw 3 or 4 million or 5 million or 6 million or 10 million at Aston Villa, I think it'd be a lovely connection back. I've always thought the Cadbury's logo would look superb on the front of the Villa shirt. Mm-hmm. Or Bourneville, probably even more so across the front of the shirt. But maybe they obviously don't have that money to throw at sponsorship. But it's a quandary. It's something that I'm glad I'm not involved in. It's something that I know that the commercial side in the club will probably sometimes have to grin and bear certain things that come true because they have their task, their job number one is to keep the money flowing into the club. But with this one, I would have to say, for the pornographic nature of some of the advertising that's been had, I would be a harsh no on the BKA myself. And yeah, it's difficult at the moment because it's rumored, it hasn't been ratified or anything like that. So don't really want to go in two-footed. I'm a big believer in not worrying until you have to worry. I'm a big believer in that. But if the BKA comes in, I'll be looking for some serious answers as to why and how people were able to look the other way for certain things, considering Norwich made such a big song and dance about it, and rightly so.
Yeah.
Norwich were being offered 5.5 million a year in the Championship. So if you extrapolate that on the Premiership levels, maybe BKA were offering like mega money, but like I think that there has to come a moralistic standpoint with regards to that, specifically when we have a women's team, specifically when we have a lot of, you know, we have a big push at the moment in the UK after the Lionesses winning honours recently. You know, it kind of seems a bit hollow to take something like that, you know. But anyway, that's my view on it, and that's my less than principle stand.
And there's worse rumors out there than this one. There's an actual porn site rumored to want to sponsor the new Everton Stadium.
Yes. So
imagine what that would be like, having to go to a live streaming porn channel stadium, whatever. Then I don't know, but I wouldn't even justify it with the name if I knew the name. But you know, it would be an absolute backward step if you went down that line. But look, we'll worry about it when it happens, if and when it happens, and hopefully by this coming out, you know, you might get another company that would come along and say, oh, hang on a minute, the fans aren't happy, I might get this deal a little bit better, let's go and see what Aston Villa want for this deal, and then we'll find out if the deal is done or not, because they will have to say something on it. So that's my hope.
Yeah. Anyway, 17 minutes in, we've taken some good questions there. We might even get onto your review, Paddy. We might hold on to your review.
Yes, we keep going with questions.
We might have to do it. Actually, you know, it's completely up to you because, as I said, this was going to be the Paddy podcast for sure, and was going to go down through every game 1 to 19. do you want to do that, or do you want to maybe pick your three best, three worst from the year so far? Maybe in a bridge it that way. Maybe talk about, I suppose, because it's difficult. The more I thought about this after we agreed to do it today, I went, There's going to be a heavy before Unai and after Unai
situation to this, you know. We'll do best three, best best worst. So, and obviously we know that Unai Emery has changed the whole outlook here. And look, he's still in the, still one of his results is going to be in the worst three. So we'll do 3-2-1.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Because my three worst actually straddled the three managers that we had. So at number three, we have the Stevenage result. We've talked about that ad nauseum, so I'm not going to talk about it anymore. At number two, I'd have the result against Newcastle under Aaron Danks. I thought that single-handedly was one of our worst performances of the season. And then our worst performance of the season was against Bournemouth at the start of the season under Steven Gerrard. So that's they're the three worst for me. Funnily enough, the three best also straddled the three managers.
Two managers. We've had three managers. Yes, sorry.
So I've lost my trail of thought there, Neil.
No, you haven't.
You have to catch me out.
You haven't.
At number three, I have the game against Everton. What?
Really? The 2-1 against Everton. You had that in one of the best games this season. Now I'm interested. Hold on a minute. I'm a storm my hot drink. So now you've sparked my interest, Patrick. Well, Everton. Okay.
Yes. The reason I've chosen that one is that we were dropping into a serious situation after losing to Bournemouth, losing to Everton. It became bigger. That would have made it become bigger than Steven Gerrard. And all of a sudden, we were sitting at the bottom of the table on 0 points after a few games. That I couldn't handle. So it was a very important game that we bounced back. Very tough conditions. I was at the match myself. It was 36 degrees, I think, inside the stadium that day. All the fans were dehydrated. So I can only imagine how hard it was for the players. So that's the reason I have it in
what?
There.
Was it Everton game or was it Southampton? I think it was the Everton game that people were saying, God, that was an awful game. Thanks be to God that, you know, that game's over with. And then the Southampton game came along and it was like, oh my God, I didn't think a game could get any worse than the Everton game.
The Southampton game was the worst one, wasn't it? It was the Southampton game that was...
I actually didn't think the Southampton... I thought it was hyperbolic. They went in kicking and screaming against the Southampton game. Southampton game was a game I pretty much expected. Two teams that... with two managers who were like, listen, will we shake hands and play out an Ireland versus Netherlands nil all draw the job in the you know, yeah. Kind of agree beforehand because both of us are going to get sacked in the morning if we don't win. So, that was, look, hey, Everton, you've Everton in there. Fair play.
I just think that was a very important win for us, and it would have went the other way completely for Everton. I'm going to overlook the 4-0 win against Brentford. I think that was a one-off, as we saw the following week. We lost 4-0 to Newcastle under Aaron Danks. But for me, at number two is the 2-0 win against Spurs on New Year's Day. And obviously, the highlight of the season is beating Man United 3-1 at home.
Yes.
So you may call that a bit of bias because there are three games I was at. So,
well,
it could possibly be the point, but I stand over picking the Everton game in there because for me in the stadium that day, I felt a little bit of the doom lifted. And I think if Gerrard had gone out and lost his last five, we'd be fighting a very different battle than we are now.
And that's probably fair enough. I think there were so many mischances.
The first five is what I meant.
First five. Yeah. But I think we lost so many chances early doors under Gerrard. You know what? I probably think that Gerrard probably would have still gotten if Unai Emery was available and that they were courting him, and it seems they were courting him for like 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks out from when they sacked Gerrard. I think if they got a sniff that he was available and the way that other managers fell during the year, I think they could have got rid of Gerrard regardless.
Maybe.
I'm going to say it. I think they could have got rid of Gerrard regardless because after the Bournemouth game, you know, fan opinion had turned hugely. And that's why I say there's a before Emery and an after Emery, because God, Paddy, there were some games we were doing team sheet tantrums here. And this is no slight on anybody in the chat, because we were the same before we came on. We were like going, okay, let's try and put a positive spin in this. Let's be all happy and jolly. And let's try and find a reason as to why everybody should tune into this game today. And it's not our job to do that. But as me, I will always try and lick the sugar off the top of the donut. You know, that's the way I do. You know, that's the way I am. I always like to try and see the best side of things, because I just find it easier to, like, I prefer to get mad in the 90 minutes that I'm watching the game and then try and let it wash over me. There's been times, obviously, this year where I haven't, and then I haven't been able to, because you know, just sometimes I just find the team frustrating. But instead of prepared, it should be frustratingly frustrating. Should be underneath the crest. But hopefully that's all going to change. So if you don't mind, Paddy, and I know I told everybody here that this would be three best, three worst from Paddy, and we can maybe go into other games maybe that just spring to mind for yourself there. But my three worst, and I have to be really honest, the Fulham game I watched after the event, and oh my God, it was worse watching it knowing the score. It was even worse watching some of the calamity that happened in the Fulham game. That would be an honourable mention.
It's an honourable mention because of the performance, but the fact it meant that we got the manager change,
yes,
is actually has the opposite opinion in my head, that he's gone. Everybody was happy to see him go. So for that reason, I didn't get too low about that game at all. And we got our answer very quick that he was gone, yeah, which was great.
And that's actually, let's talk about that game. And the reason I wanted to bring it up was because, you know, that was a game whereby we could have been a huge laughing stock around the league. I won't say that we got to the levels, and this isn't me having a kick at Everton. I like Everton as a football team. I love the history of Everton. I've been to Goodison Park more than that's the other ground I've been to more than I've been. That's the ground I've been to most. Other than Villa Park, is Goodison Park. It is what it is, and they're going to get their new stadium. I like Everton. I don't like how they're behaving right now. I don't think we would have ever gotten to that stage. But to sack a player, to sack a manager literally in the corridor on his way in,
knowing that he had to get on the bus back to Birmingham.
Yeah. Like the whole hand going, hey, Stevie, before you go into talk, lads, there, yeah. It's not you, it's me, right? look, no hard feelings.
No, right? it was all him.
No hard feelings. Yeah. Right. Look, listen, we give you a lift home. Like, yeah, go on. Tell the boys that they're great. Excellent. Perfect. You know, like that's ballsy to do that. And you may call it hot-headed, and it probably was hot-headed in the moment, considering we found out that Suarez literally got up at halftime and took the door off the hinges on his way in from his box at Craven Cottage. And to be honest with you, that could have rattled the whole stand in Craven Cottage, knowing how old that stand is. But look, fire and brimstone sometimes brings out... It can bring rash thoughts, or it can bring moments of clarity as well. And I think that in the aftermath, the clarity came, and you can see what good business people Wes Edens and Nassif Suarez are, from the point of view of, like, we all heard Unai Emery. We all heard Unai Emery was going to be the man that was going to, or maybe the man that was going to come in. But all of us were also thinking there was a small bit of Sean Dyche somewhere in the background that might have been just nibbling away at the back of our heads. Like, so they saw their man, they went and they got him. And the Pochettino rumours and stuff like that, maybe they were true. And if they did go for Poch, I'm not even sure that I would have wanted Poch over Unai, considering I've now seen Unai in action for 6 weeks. And I know the try before you buy kind of thing aspect with Unai over the last 6 weeks has been pretty... There's a lot of allure with Unai, and maybe we'd have had it with Poch, but like even that little post of him looking out, and I know it's pure PR, and I know he probably didn't even post it himself on Instagram, but that little post looking out the window of Villa Park and going at the very end, hashtag addicted to Villa. Like, we all fall for it and we all love it, and I'm here for more of it. And why don't I have a t-shirt that says hashtag addicted to Villa on it for sale at the moment? I have no idea. But that's because I'm not a good businessman like Wes Edens and Nassif Suarez, and that's why we have Unai Emery. So bringing a full circle back from my rant after two hot toddies and a half is that the Fulham game, could we put it in one of our best games? As opposed to one of our worst games, Petty?
Well, that's the whole point I'm making. Because it meant the manager was gone. That's why I have no opinion on the game itself. The game itself is irrelevant. We all got what we wanted. And I think we're in a much brighter position than we ever imagined we'd be when Gerrard left. I know we had that great one-hit wonder under Danks, as I mentioned. That was you know, a great result against Brentford. Mm. I think there was an element of you know, a bit of relief around the stadium that day, that you know, that it was no longer Gerrard and we were looking up and we were after winning 4-0, but then we got out and got spanked by Newcastle the following week, and that's absolutely fine. I want to go back to what you just said about Emery's thing. Rachel says, "I believe Emery wrote that." I actually do myself. Anyone you ever speak to about Unai Emery, football to him is an addiction.
He's Basque as well.
Breathes football. He is totally immersed in every club, anything he's ever done football-wise over the years. Anyone you speak to, I can tell you that all that Arsenal stuff has really, really hurt and affected him. And he is only just happy to get a second shot at this. And he is definitely not going to let us down. He will give it everything he can. I've no doubt. And I've no doubt that he wrote all those words. And it did give me a little warm, fuzzy feeling when I read it.
And isn't it fantastic? We talked about connection being... The connection with the fans was lost very quickly with Gerrard. And do you know what? Probably it was because he sat in the stands for every single one of their Champions League games, the Liverpool Champions League games. Look, I can't fire a stone at him from the point that at the end of the day, he's a Liverpool fan, he's a Liverpool legend. But my big problem here is that go away and manage Poland and sit in the stand every time. But when you're the Aston Villa manager, or even when you're the Rangers manager, it's fine. There's no direct competition. It's absolutely fine. But there's always going to be that question when you face Liverpool from an Aston Villa fan is, does he really want to win it? Does he really want to win this game? And obviously he does, because why would he shoot himself in the foot?
Yeah.
But if we're going to put yourself in that position where your ideas are going to be questioned. And look, as you said, football is an addiction. It's an addiction. Liverpool's an addiction for him. Liverpool dragged him up off his bootstraps. That boy owes every single thing he has to Liverpool. Mm-hmm. And fair play to him. And I completely understand why he was in the stadium. But that doesn't butter any parsnips for me as an Aston Villa fan. And it never will. So if I literally just eject myself from the Aston Villa fandom, I'll say, do you know what? I love Ian Taylor stands in the hold. Or sits in the hold. I love Tony Daly takes your seat sometimes. I love the fact that, you know, all these fellas come back. And I know when Jack Grealish is not playing for Man City, I know he'd love to be in the hold end, or he'd love to be probably in a box for Jack, to be honest with you. Mark Albrighton, if I'm not mistaken, the Championship playoff game, he was at the playoff game in amongst the fans as a fan, you know? Mm-hmm. I love that, and that's absolutely fantastic. And I would never want any person to have that taken away from them just because they're a player. But there's a time and a place. There's a time and a place, I think, as well. And it's also my modus operandi is to want the best for Aston Villa. And on a Wednesday when Villa are playing on a Saturday, I don't want Steven Gerrard to be in the cop. I want him to be at home watching Southampton so that we can beat Southampton or whoever we're playing, you know. 100%. That's just my MO.
Yeah.
And Unai Emery, sorry, you know, because I'm in a bit of one here. Unai Emery owns Real Union. We won't see Unai Emery. Well, actually, no, I shouldn't say that, because the one time we do that, everyone go, why don't you hate him, Neil, for being over at Real Union Stadium? But then again, they're in a completely different league to us, and they're a completely different stature to us and stuff like that. So, but what I'm saying is that, like, he's not. He doesn't put himself out there as an ambassador for them within England to be in the English game, and the English game want to talk to him. Like, he was doing interviews about Liverpool before those Liverpool games when he was at them as manager of Aston Villa.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Absolutely, and that was I can't remember the exact scenario, but Liverpool were playing a Champions League game. He was there while our next opponents were playing a league game. Liverpool Rangers. No. Yeah. It could have been. Was it Liverpool Rangers?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
And my opinion was that, say it was Fulham, I can't remember who it was, we were due to play a team at the weekend and they played midweek, and that's where he should have been. He should have been there looking at them inside out, in the flesh, in 3D, but he was at Anfield. And that was a turning point. I can't remember who it was that we were playing on the Saturday, but he was definitely at the Liverpool game, and I was annoyed at that. And I don't know whether I said that.
We played Fulham on a Wednesday or Thursday, if I remember rightly.
Fulham
was a midweek fixture, yeah.
Yeah.
Other games as well that spring to mind, Paddy, I think that we should discuss over the last, because we are doing a year review. I forget that sometimes. I was pretty miffed at the Crystal Palace game. Remember we went through that portion of the start of the season where we scored a goal, we concede the goal straight away. An incredibly frustrating part of the season. We'd only scored like 6 goals after 6 games or whatever. I can't remember when the Crystal Palace game was. I'm just checking up here. It was actually a third game. We lost 3-1. But if I'm not mistaken, in that game we scored and we conceded almost directly afterwards. Yes, Ollie Watkins scored in the 5th minute. We conceded in the 7th minute to Wilfred Zaha. Against Everton, we did the exact same thing. We score, we conceded almost straight away with that back post own goal from Luca Dean, which you couldn't do much about. Incredibly frustrating period as an Aston Villa fan. And I think that game deserves a small bit of conversation, because that was the game for me, 3 games in, after what could have been described as a pretty positive off-season from a PR point of view. That was the game, I think, for me, where I looked at it and I went, things aren't rosy and things won't be rosy for a while if this guy stays here in that game, because we were completely played off the park and we had no answer to anything in that game.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Fair enough.
There was like that game was Eze and what's his name? The other lad. When he came on, Olise, they had their way with us, really, you know. And Phil, what you call him, Mateta comes on in the 70th minute, I think, if I'm not mistaken, or he comes on, it could have been 80th minute, could have been 85th minute, I don't know. But he comes on, he scores straight away after he comes on. Like that lack of. That lack of concentration, that lack of organisation, that lack of anything back then. And I was very critical of Konsa for the first couple of games of the season. But I must say that new coaching has given him a small bit of a lease of life. I'm just not sure he is the guy to bring us to where we need to be. I'm happy with him, obviously, as we are. And I know himself and Mings are beginning to get back that cohesion in their partnership. But upgrades... I would be okay with upgrades at centre-half, or an upgrade, should I say, at centre-half. And I think when Diego Carlos comes back, he probably moves to the right-hand side and Tyrone, beside Tyrone Mings. As Konsa has done a lot to come back in and he's progressed as a player over the last few weeks. But that was one of the games, and those first few games, I thought that he was pretty shaky. And I remember coming away from that game going, damn, why did we lose Diego Carlos to that in like the 97th minute against Everton to an Achilles injury? But he's back in his way, and it looks like he's back in training. I don't know, is he back on the field yet? I hope one of the reporters asks Unai that question soon. Is he back on the field? Is he back on the grass?
I don't think he is back on grass at all.
But I think it was mid-February was the date, I think.
Yeah. That Crystal Palace game was pretty frustrating, and they had a narrow one ruled out for offside as well, so it could have been a whole lot worse. And as you say, Mateta, come on. he actually came on the 70th minute and scored in the 74th. Crazy stuff. But anyway.
Yeah. Other games, another game actually I think that I enjoyed a good bit. Most of them look, as I say, I enjoyed the first half against Chelsea. First half against Chelsea, we played some really good stuff. I thought, like, we peppered their goal and we were the better team. But then the second half, we capitulated. And I think over Steven Gerrard's tenure as manager, that's the story of his tenure. It was 1 foot in, 1 foot out all the time. Never really put 90 minutes together apart from against Southampton last season, against Leeds. We had games where we played sublimely brilliantly. First half against Man City, first 60 minutes against Man City, the last game of the season last year was brilliant. Like, unbelievable. Coutinho looked like Ballon d'Or standard again. He was outstanding. Last 20 minutes just were with that, like, and that's what fans remember. And unfortunately, that's going to probably be the epitaph of Aston Villa for Steven Gerrard, and specifically for the first half of the season, was could never string 90 minutes together. And when we did, it was dour, stifling football with very little invention and certainly no idea what the hell was going on in the field. And I think the players would admit that as much as the fans would.
The one thing I will say, at the risk of me sounding very, very salty and giving out about Gerrard all along, I would like to say thank you, Steven Gerrard, because the one legacy you've left is Boubacar Kamara.
Yes.
And I think for me, if we were to pick out somebody who has been absolutely head and shoulders above everybody on the pitch, has been Boubacar Kamara. He's an absolute joy to watch. Mm. We've talked about it so many times. I'm sure there's clubs all around Europe going, how the hell did Aston Villa get him? And I've no doubt in my mind that Steven Gerrard was very influential in that conversation. But he's our player. So for that much, we will thank Steven Gerrard for that.
And you know what? Steven Gerrard, the man, comes across like maybe a very lovely person. And I actually believe that he is, because that video that they did when Boubacar Kamara came in with his father, and Steven Gerrard was delighted to see him, and he goes, "Where's your dad? I want to see him. Where's your family?" I found that quite endearing. And at the time, it actually melted my heart, because, look, God willing, next year when I get signed to a Premier League football team, I hope that they show me that respect and that grace.
Yeah,
to come and look for my father when I get signed as well.
He did keep a lot of things very personal. There was a lot of meetings held in people's kitchens and his own kitchen. And
I was
like
going
that.
To bring that up there as well. I don't know whether we could bring up the name that was mentioned, but
the name we missed out on, Neil, is it?
Let's just say I really liked. I was really happy with the name. But look, c'est la vie, and it didn't happen. But you mentioned it, like, how the hell did Aston Villa sign this guy? That's good. That's good, because we should be signing those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no reason. You look back at the history of this club, and I know history only that, like, realistically, history only lasts 18 months nowadays in football. Because it, like, you see, Chelsea bought a fella this week for 88 million. He's the bones of 50 games played. You know,
outrageous.
A meaningful games played. And look, is he good? Yeah, he's good. But I kind of want to see a sample set. And, you know, if you look at a sample set of Aston Villa, where we were before our relegation, a mainstay in the Premier League, we'd won trophy after trophy after trophy. Yes, we probably haven't been very good since the mid-90s, but Liverpool weren't either. And now all of a sudden, Liverpool are able to sign players. So what I'm saying is that, you know, and it probably brings a full circle with regards to this year's review, for me anyway, Paddy. I know that you probably have a couple more things to say, but Unai Emery is hopefully going to be that person that squares the circle here for Aston Villa and brings a modicum of, like Aston Villa have won tons more than, or Aston Villa have won more meaningful things, I think, than the likes of Spurs. Maybe we haven't won them as recently, things like the FA Cup and so on. But there's no reason that we shouldn't be batting at the same average as Spurs.
100%. And
with Spurs, like the big catalyst for Spurs was getting in Edgar Davids. Edgar Davids led to the likes of Van der Vaart, led to the likes of Luka Modric, led to the likes of X, Y, and Z. They caught lightning in a bottle with Bale. I firmly believe they fluked it out of it with Bale. And fair play to them. They took a chance. Because
I'll tell you a funny story about Gareth Bale.
Do
back in
Shelburne on loan.
I'm sure I've told on the podcast before that when I was coaching, I used to sit beside the opposition's bench. You know, where those empty seats you see now are there a kickoff for where all the people sit, because there's so many different people on a match day looking after nutrition and physios and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
we used to be able to buy those seats. And one day I bought those seats and Harry Redknapp was the manager and Gareth Bale sat beside me. He wasn't even in the match day squad. And he sat there with his headphones, but he came out after half time and he was eating something and he was talking to the guy in front and talking to me. And he looked at me and went, "She's never going to fucking play me." Exact words he said. And it was just mind-blowing to see what Gareth Bale became, even though Harry Redknapp didn't do it for him, you know. So it's a mad game when you have that, and that's always what I say about my fear about players leaving. Like Jordan Veretout went on, had a really good career. Morgan Sanson, if he left, that was my worry about him.
Relegation, I think, killed that as well. Morgan Sanson will not have the career that Jordan Veretout did. I'm going to stake my left arm on that.
Yeah, but I think if we'd assigned Boubacar Kamara now, given the trajectory we're on under Emery, it'd be understandable. But we were mediocre. We were just hanging in there under Gerrard.
Good point.
And he managed to get him to come. So now people are coming into to this team. You know, there's talk of Guendouzi, obviously, this week. The likes of Guendouzi's going, "Hang on a minute. I can go to Aston Villa and play with Boubacar Kamara again. I can go and play with a few world-class players in there. Diego Carlos is there. Emi Martinez, arguably the best goalkeeper in the world, is there." You know, there's an attractive proposition to come to Aston Villa. So I think we have to strike while the iron's hot and get these players in now rather than worrying about it in the summer. As you say, if Chelsea can go and absolutely blow people out of the water for signings, why can't we? Because, you know, does financial fair play exist?
Oh, but you can't be robbing my line. Financial fair play is a myth. It's a myth. Now, it is a structure. It's a structure I was in favor of because I thought it would allow us to be able to catch up in a way.
You're supposed to be able to catch up. You're supposed to give other people a chance, but it doesn't. It doesn't. It's not fair and it's not feasible. Like you've got Manchester City who were spending that kind of money when they couldn't sell all their tickets. It's outrageous. Like
Chelsea. So the big thing here is.
Did I read somewhere that Chelsea have spent $500 million?
They've spent over $500 million and want to spend more on Noni Maduke, and they want to spend potentially on someone else linked to them today. It's a joke. It's an actual joke. Like, you look at their left back situation at the moment. $63 million, potentially $63 million on Kukurea. Like, the lad's useless. I'm going to be honest with you. Guys, I cannot see it. Other than the floppy hair, I won't go in him. The boy can't defend. Useless. You've got Ben Chilwell, who's injured at the moment. They're talking about signing another left back to come in there as well. Plus, they've got this academy stacked with stars. They can't get games. Hudson-Odoi, free transfer this season. By the way, if you're listening, Johan Lange, why not sign Hudson-Odoi? 22 years of age. There's your winger. You know, things like that. This guy that they're bringing in at the moment, Lewis Hall, they're bringing him in. They're giving him left back minutes. The second Ben Chilwell is back. Where's that guy? Where's that guy going to be? Levi Colwell out on loan, playing brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Like, literally would, like, definitely going to be an England player. Without a shadow of a doubt, going to be an England player. Just brilliant. It just irks me. It really irks me that they did this whole thing under Abramovich where they bought up every young player going and brought him into their squad at 16, 15, 16, into their academy and never used them. And now what they're doing is, under Bowley, is they're buying up every 23, 24, 25-year-old and bringing them into their squad now. So what they've done is they've fluffed both squads. They're going to come up against it from the 25-man squad rule, I hope. I hope there has to be some sort of rule that does it.
They can't fit everybody in.
But the thing for me, Paddy, though, is that the financial fair play, you're dead right. What I've been saying this off microphone for a good while. Why doesn't a mid-table team take a chance and sign? Like Forrest should have done this. Forrest should have done what Chelsea are doing. They should have bought their 21 players in and given them fucking 7 8-year deals and had a ton of money to spend afterwards. You know, it would have balanced out the books, essentially. Now, obviously, with Forest, they're in a bit, they're in a spot of difficulty at the moment. None of those signings worked out. But if you bring in 21 signings, what do you expect? Or whatever they brought in.
Yeah.
But for a team like Aston Villa, we should be able to go out in a summer transfer window, sign 5 players for big money, put them on big contracts, and amortize it across the life of those contracts. Like Boubacar Kamara's. Go out there and horse money at free agents. Horse it at them.
But like the bottom line is it's going to take someone of the caliber of us to try and push on into that. Like, Spurs have threatened to do it so many times. They just haven't bought that quality of player. We need to be, you know, eating at that table as far as I'm concerned. You know, imagine being a fan of the likes of Bury or our neighbours across the city who got deducted points. Bury gone out of existence.
And going back to the Everton, Bill Kenwright wanted to give them a million to keep them safe and never wanted it back. And he was refused under the law whereby he can't have two clubs. He would have been considered a buying of the club and not a gift. He actually said he wanted it to be a gift to a charity that would then pay it to Bury. And the Football League said no. And that made Bury go out of business. And that's wrong. Yeah. That's absolutely wrong.
But when you consider... You wouldn't even buy a toenail of the players that are being bought by Chelsea at the moment, and that would have saved Bury. The money that was spent by Birmingham City when they got their deduction, that wouldn't have even saved Bury. Do you know what I mean? It's wrong on so many levels. There's no way anybody is catching up because the big can just get bigger. They can spend what they like. Manchester City get a European ban. What they do? Throw money at it. Go to arbitration for sport. Overturned. So I think that was the one that said to me that this doesn't really exist at this level and it's time for us to push on.
It just doesn't. And Sarko, I completely understand that. My example was satirical, I suppose, at best and flimsy at worst. But
in fairness, the Forest, they've had a good run of results now and they're into the semi-final of the Cup. And you know
they have, but
I think they'll have enough to get out of that. I don't think they'll go down. I think there's worse teams there. But...
They're kind of up shit creek at the moment, though, because they need to. They're like Barcelona. They'll come at like Emmanuel Dennis. They're kind of half hoping Watford come back in and buy him for 70% of what you know, and Nottingham Forest bought him for, because they're going to get into the situation here, like with the multitude of players that they bought, that you can't move them because they can only play for a certain amount of teams every year, you know, and. You know, you play with fire, you're going to get burned in that aspect. You really do. They've done something that's never been done. We were cast together for it. Fulham were cast together for it. We only signed, like, what was it, 9 players? I think that offseason.
Yeah. 23 plus a couple in this window already. Is that correct?
Yes, they brought in that guy from Brazil. And maybe someone else. I don't know. And Dean Henderson is injured. And they're talking about maybe signing another goalkeeper. Well, Dean Henderson is injured. Like, but that's where it goes. That's the squad becomes uneven. And like they signed Emmanuel Dennis and they're looking to pawn him off now again. Who's gonna do that? Would you have taken him in the summer? I probably would have taken him in the summer for the right price. Yeah,
but never know how. Like we've seen a multitude of players come through the door that haven't lived up to their expectation or promise. So some of them these things happen. It's not just Notts Forest that have done it. We've squandered a lot of money. Yeah. So look, it's not a Nottingham Forest podcast. It's an Aston Villa podcast. We're in a good place. We're at the halfway point. The most important thing is, I think everybody is happy with where we're at. How could we not be, given the start that Unai Emery has had? Take out those two cup results. Take out that first half performance against Wolves. You know, big decisions were made in that Wolves match as well, which gave us a chance of getting something out of it. You have to admire the man. I think he's ballsy. I think he lives by the sword and dies by the sword. He makes decisions, and you know, I trust him. And to be fair, you go back a year and we said we'd trust Gerrard until he proved otherwise. We have to be that way with the manager now. I'd say he hurt a little bit, been booed off against Wolves at halftime. I'd say that's eaten away at him a little bit. So there's a lot to play for. There's going to be more players coming through the door, absolutely. And I think the future is bright. And I think if we could just increase the atmosphere and another octave within the stadium, I think it'd be much, much better place to be.
Well, Paddy, look, if you just went over every week, it's your fault. It's 100% your fault. Like, I've said it. I said it in the podcast before. It's your fault.
My next two games are Man City and Arsenal. So if that works out well, I think we'll have a pretty good season.
Man City and Arsenal. Yeah. I suppose, spoiler alert for everybody. I'm looking at a couple of games. Paddy's weekend. I'm looking at getting over for Paddy's weekend if I can. I've a very, like, my schedule is incredibly fluid, like, so it and sorry, that came across as being very boasty. No, it's very fluid for a different point of view. But potentially Bournemouth or potentially Forest. They're the two games I'm looking at going to. I'm potentially both. Mm. Who knows what will happen. But we'll see what the story is. It could be like
a shout out for anybody who's around Birmingham on St. Patrick's weekend. The legend that is Paul McGrath,
yes,
is going to be on the Thursday night, the 16th, in St. Pat's in Digbeth. If someone wants to check out their socials, you can find out how to buy the tickets there. And then you've got St. Patrick's Day on the Friday, and then the match potentially on the Saturday. That sounds like a nice weekend.
Yeah, I did have someone I wanted to say hello to. Phil Petty, when I get up, for anybody who contacts me on Facebook, I do apologize. I just try my best not to use that app as much. But if anybody wants to contact me on Twitter, I always use that app. So that's all good. Yes, I wanted to say hello to both Charlie Palmer and Harry Palmer, and Stuart Palmer as well. The two guys were ball boys at the FA Cup youth game today against Southampton. And I just want to say, fair play, you know, Charlie plays for the club as well. And, you know, I just want to say hello to those guys too. So great stuff.
And Charlie, I know, has been in contact with us for a lot over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Stuart. And it's nice to see them having a day out like that today. And I apologize to everybody on the podcast that follows me on Facebook because I've deleted it completely and I'm no longer on it. So I think I just went without telling anybody. So if someone,
anybody wants to run the For the Love of Paul McGrath Facebook and Instagram account, it's all yours.
Instagram is fine. Facebook is just toxic. Can't
do it. Paddy, you're running the fucking Instagram account from here on in because there's only so many times I can be sold a terror gun. Boom, 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 boom. I've no interest in buying a terror gun. If anybody from out there works with Instagram, can you please just turn off those terror gun ads and, you know, and Athletic Greens? We can't even get Athletic Greens here in Ireland, by the way. We can't get it. Our Hello Fresh. I don't think we can get a Hello Fresh here either. I really don't want to be sold things I can't get. Plus, do I look like a fella who order Hello Fresh? Come on, I'm 37 with a grey beard. Get out of it. Stop, Instagram. Yeah, well, stop.
I have to say that I think the Instagram ads work very well because they keep telling me I need a hair transplant. So they've obviously been doing some work on it.
Well, there's our next Twitter poll. Our first Twitter poll. Right, we're talking
anyway,
absolute nonsense here now.
Nonsense, yeah. And Scott Taggart has said stadium plans have to be one of the major highlights of the year so far.
Yes,
100%.
I'd say they're second only to the Inner City Academy. Inner City Academy, I think, will pay for itself million times fold.
And we couple all them in together, I suppose, because it's all part of the same
infrastructural upgrades. Let's call them infrastructural upgrades. So. Let's call them that. And look, I suppose maybe in a couple of weeks' time, we could be talking about, do you know what was at the end of the year, we would say, do you know what was a massive highlight of the year, Paddy? The self-pouring taps at the ground. So that at halftime, I went up and I got a pint off one of the self-pouring taps. Maybe
I'm
that might be a massive highlight.
That when I get over again.
I'm looking forward to bringing my Hacker 5000 and hacking into it and getting a load of free points. That's what I'm looking forward to. I don't have a Hacker 5000. I don't even know if there is a Hacker 5000, but I imagine you could hack into the system and hack it somewhere that you could get a lot of free points. And nobody should do it, just like you should bet responsibly. Nobody should do that. You should always drink responsibly, and you should always hack responsibly as well. If you're going to hack something, don't hack your own. Do not hack Aston Villa. Jesus, do not hack Aston Villa. Why won't I shut up talking? Stop hacking Aston Villa, all of you out there that are watching the podcast. Please don't do it. You're only hurting everybody else. Right, on that note, Paddy, it's 10:30, and this has been good crack. And we're probably actually going to be back tomorrow with a... Are you available tomorrow, Paddy? Post-production meeting.
Maybe tomorrow, maybe Thursday.
Maybe tomorrow, maybe Thursday. We're going to be back at some stage anyway with a preview of the Southampton game at the weekend. I think actually maybe Thursday might be better because... I think there's a couple of outstanding injury issues. Like, I haven't seen anything in Ollie Watkins, Paddy. Have you seen?
Not a thing.
Yeah, but has anybody out there seen anything on Ollie Watkins? I haven't seen anything at all. Matty Cash, as well, is another person. I think. Oh, thank you so much. Where did that come from?
Matt put that in before we started because he didn't think he'd be out of his meeting to come on the live.
Oh, Jesus, I completely forgot that. Matt, thank you so much. I appreciate that, Matt. Thank you so much. And thanks to Ken. Thank you as well, Ken. Really appreciate Ken. That. My equipment should be back very, very soon. I've got some good news that my equipment can actually be fixed, so it should be back very, very soon, which is delightful for me. The only thing that couldn't be fixed was the microphone, but it's okay. We'll work it out the week for. Be all right. But anyway, Aston Villa versus Southampton. We'll be back during the week with that. Thank you so much to everybody for watching. Thank you so much to everybody who listened back to this afterwards and didn't watch it live. That's okay too. We still love you too. Paddy, have you anything to say before we go?
No, all good.
Excellent. Well, everybody, enjoy the rest of your night. It's 10:30 here in GMT. I hope you enjoy the rest of your night, and we'll be back very soon. And I still sniff another signing, Paddy, if there is another signing or another link. I'm actually going to do a Gerard Deulofeu podcast tomorrow. Okay, right. I'm going to commit to doing it right now tonight. I'm going to commit to doing a Gerard Deulofeu podcast.
It's not going away. I can't see it, but it's not going away.
It's not going away, but I'm going to do it because the reason I want to do it is because I just think that he's... the more I look at him, the more I think that he fits what Unai Emery wants, and he's probably a better option than Danjuma. And I just said that out loud. But anyway, tune into the podcast tomorrow when I do that. But until then, everybody, stay safe, stay healthy. Thanks a million for watching, and all that's left to say is up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.